Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends. This is Bonnie Kay and Misty Hall tonight with the Straight Wives Radio Show, coming to you on Memorial Day weekend. Happy holiday, Misty.
Happy holiday, Bonnie. How are you today?
I'm doing good. We'd like to remind people that this is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men or bisexual or asexual or whatever kind of sexual man you have that's not heterosexual. And each week, Misty and I discuss the issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. And it just so happens this week, Misty, I've been receiving a lot of letters from around the different parts of the world, from all different kinds of countries. So to all of our listeners in other countries, we say hello. Also, if you would like to call in and talk to us, here is our call-in number, because we are going to ask a couple questions tonight and ask people to call in for their feedback. Our call-in number is area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that one more time. 646 is the area code, 716-4893. So please feel free to call us with your comments, your questions, and your stories, because I really do believe that people learn the best from hearing other people's stories. Don't you think so, Misty?
Absolutely. Even though all their stories are so similar, you know, it's so helpful when someone else hears someone else's story, because you can guarantee there's going to be a straight walk out there somewhere that will identify with the story that you're calling in to share. So it's so important.
Tonight, one of the issues I would like to raise, if our callers could call in, to give us your comments, because this question often comes up in our conversations. People say, well, I wish I would have known, or I wish I could have known earlier. And yet other people say, I wish I would have never found out. You know, once the reality hits them and they have to deal with it and finally face it, you know, they feel very bad that they did have to find out. So I'm putting that question out to our listeners, if you could call in and give us your opinion, that if at what point in your marriage would you have wanted to know? Obviously, you know, we're not going to start at the beginning before you got married, because a lot of your husbands themselves weren't clearly defined, or if they were, they weren't ready to tell you. But did you find out, when you found out, or if you did get an admission, was it better? Or if you're living with the limbo man, one of those men who just will never tell, do you wish you would have an admission, or do you feel that you're better off not knowing? And if you would like to call and discuss that with us, once again, we're at area code 646-716-4893. Missy, before we get started, I would like to hear a little bit about your upcoming workshops. Could you tell our listeners about that?
Absolutely. Every month I have a Saturday seminar. It's always the second month of the second Saturday in the month. And this month I think is such an important one, because I always get letters, and it's always in the chats. It's about self-esteem. Bonnie, you and I know what being in a gay straight marriage can do to self-esteem.
It just strips it right off of you.
Destroys self-esteem. The good part is it's rebuildable. And the next Saturday in June will be delivered on June the 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the great part about it, it's a live conference call. And you don't need a lot of gadgets to participate in this call. If you have a telephone that will dial long distance, and some way I can get you the information to dial in and send you that number, that's all you need. You'll also get a downloadable booklet or journal, and it's geared specifically towards self-esteem. And if you know, and if you search out there, you're not going to find a whole lot of information on self-esteem if you've been married to a gay husband. And what I've done, I've collected the information I have, and I turn it into something that pertains to specifically the straight wife. So this information should be very helpful. You get that along with the Saturday seminar. And just a peek, I'll give you a little bit of an example of what we'll be covering.
That would be great.
Yeah, okay, good. And you can even write this down. So if you can't join the group, write this down, because this is always important. two of the really important things into rebuilding self-esteem is, one is you have to practice self-care. Oftentimes we forget about ourselves, we worry about everyone else, we worry about trying to make the marriage work, we worry while we're going through the divorce, all these things. We worry about everyone and everything except us. And this is a time that you have to be selfish. And selfish is a good word. Selfish is not a bad word. Selfish means you have to take the time to do some self-care things for yourself. Self-care can be as simple as joining a support group. And Bonnie Kay, she has the free chats every Thursday night, Sunday night. Those are amazing. So don't say you can't afford it. Those are free, and she provides those. Other wonderful self-care things you can do is carry a little notebook with you. I mean, something tiny that you can fit in your pocket or your purse, and write down the times that you feel some comfort or joy. And I know there's times in there that you do, even though they're hard to find. We all experience a little comfort and joy sometimes. Write down some things that bring that to you, and keep this ongoing process. Always keep this little notebook in your purse. And then, when you find yourself feeling down, feeling low, pull out that little notebook and say, okay, what can I do from this list of things? Commit to doing something from that list of things. It sounds simple, it sounds cheesy, but I can promise you the greatest steps forward all start with small things. It's not the great things, because you can change the small things even when you're overwhelmed. If you're, when you get really overwhelmed, you look at monumental things to do, it's just going to make you more overwhelmed. So look for the simple. That's what helps move you forward, even in self-esteem. And another little sneak peek that we will cover is, Bonnie, I know you identify with with this. Every time I talk to a straight wife as a client, mm-hmm. and I give them a compliment, they'll say, oh, that's nothing. Oh, no, not me. I'm not that smart. For example, I'll say, wow, that's a brilliant idea. How can I support you in doing that? That's such a great idea. And then the client will say, oh, no, that's nothing. I'm not that smart. Or I'm not that pretty. Bonnie, how many times do you hear that?
All the time. And it's definitely, something that requires a lot of assertiveness training. And I used to do assertiveness training for a long time, and I was my own worst student, I must say. Because, I always tell people, do as I say, not as I do.
Mm-hmm.
I can teach you great, but whether I can do it myself or not, I'm a very slow learner.
Exactly. And I think straight wives, we get an extra helping of this, being married to a gay man. And what I challenge all of you straight wife listeners out there, this week, when someone pays you a compliment, I want you to write these letters down, these two words down. Write them down huge. The only thing I want you to say is thank you. Do not discount.
And stop looking for excuses to contradict it, right?
If you've got a new hairstyle, wearing a pretty new dress or pants or whatever, and someone says, oh, you look so beautiful, say thank you. Do not discount it. That's all you need to say. Smile and say thank you. So anytime someone pays you a compliment this week, I want you to practice saying thank you. So that's just a little bit of a peek of what we'll be going through. And like I said, it's the simple changes that creates the long-standing changes and helps turn our life around. You don't want to get too overwhelmed with trying to make monumental changes. And, it's just a small peek, and I encourage you to join us in the Saturday seminar. The cost of the Saturday seminars are always kept low. They're $30. The greatest part is you can participate anonymously, because you call in from the telephone. You can use whatever name that you choose to use. You have privacy in this phone call. And I think the greatest part, I know the content is always great, but the greatest part is connecting with other straight spouses from around the world in these calls. That's where so much of the healing begins. And, Bonnie, I think you'll agree with me on that.
Yes, I think that talking to other women, we do it through our support chat online, but actually hearing the voices of our women, even when women call into our show, but I get so many nice letters from other women saying it was so good to hear this one or that one because, I felt a connection. And I think mm-hmm. that live support, or voice support is certainly a wonderful thing to have. And while we're on the topic, Misty, since we are talking a little bit about your workshop, I would like to say that one of the techniques, I hope I'm not giving this away, Misty, but okay. If I am, you'll just have to come up with something else. One of the techniques that Misty has talked to our group about, and I pass this on to other people as well, and I have one friend in particular who's like my best friend, and I'm really shocked at how important this is to her. This is something I learned from you, of having a jar, and every time, you know, you feel good about that you did something right, putting a pebble in there or a marble in there, you know,
absolutely,
to start looking at yourself through that jar to see all of your accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was dealing with a very strong self-esteem issue in a relationship with a straight man, not with a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a bad relationship, somewhat abusive in some, you know, ways. And she
mm-hmm.
knew that she had to get past it. And I always say that in every woman's life, and I try to tell this to my women who have straight boyfriends, not gay ones, or straight husbands with problems, that everybody has one magnificent obsession in their lifetime. You never know when it's going to take place or who it's going to be with, but you're going to find yourself so drawn to someone, like unnaturally so. It's not like a normal falling in love with someone. It's falling obsessed with someone. And
mm-hmm.
I say everybody's entitled to do it once. I certainly have done it myself. But with this particular friend of mine, these obsessions are usually not positive ones. And it took her a couple of years to get past it. And one of the ways that really helped her build up her self-esteem and feel better is that every time she said no to him or didn't answer his phone call, it may seem like a little thing, but it was such a big thing to her. And she said, I'm going to give myself a marble. I said, give yourself two.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and she was so excited.
Exactly.
And she
exactly.
watched that jar fill up, and she started looking at mm-hmm. all the strong points that she had about herself and all the positive points. So, you know, she's a new person today. Thanks to you, Misty Hall.
Thank you. And I'm practicing it. Thank you, Bonnie.
You're welcome.
And it is such a wonderful, easy exercise. And that's what the self-esteem thing is going to be full of. It's not going to be full of, you know, taking your trip to Tibet to learn how to be with yourself. I mean, which that would be wonderful. But it's going to be simple things that you can do at home. And it's going to be those simple things that can pull you forward. And that's what this whole Saturday seminar is going to be about, these little simple things. And the jar to put the little tokens in is wonderful because we as humans need something physical to look at and some type of action or ritual. And when we think about it and then actually find a shell or a marble or something to put in this little decorative jar, it makes it more physical and we actually have to move our body. There's something about the movement and the ritual and thinking, adding it all together, that somehow it can sink into our mind and help us realize, hey, I am worth this, or hey, I did do that. So we can use it as a form of measurement and see
That's
how
true,
we're going.
And, you know, I would like to also make this comment that I know it's not going to be, you know, a very happy comment that many women want to hear, because a lot of times a lot of us don't want to have to deal with the truth about ourselves. But
mm-hmm.
we get to a point where when we feel we've lost everything, you know, we're kind of like hitting rock bottom, so the only way to go is up. But our reality
mm-hmm.
is that a lot of women who are in these marriages, I always say it's not accidental that women find themselves in these marriages, that there's a certain type or prototype of woman that a gay man will look for to be his wife. And usually these women, like myself and like you, you know, we're the people pleasers of the world.
Yep.
You know, we have our own self-esteem issues, and so in having them, you know, it's really important for us to have to validate ourselves all the time by being good to other people to make ourselves feel worthy. And
mm-hmm.
I know that I've spent many years of my life doing this, always worrying whose feelings am I going to hurt, how can I help a stranger, how I want everybody to like me. And
mm-hmm.
this is all part of non-assertive behavior, and a lot of times when I was teaching assertiveness training, people would really confuse the term assertiveness with aggressive. And one thing has nothing to do with the other. Being assertive is being able to say what you want because you feel that you're entitled to ask for what you want. And this really filters down not only into your relationships with your, you know, your mate, but also into your work, also into your social interactions with your friends, because, I mean, even little things, and I guess, you know, some of these are embarrassing, but I really do feel that we learn from each other by sharing our experiences. So my life is pretty much an open book of all my misfortunes and all my mistakes, but I feel that everybody can connect to them at some point, because I think we've all been in this boat. But for instance, many years ago, when I was teaching, I had a student who used to call me, who, you know, I became friendly with, and she would stay on the phone with me for over an hour. And I would want to hang up after the first 6 minutes, because there was really nothing left for me to say. But rather than hurt her feelings, you know, even when I would try to edge the conversation a little bit towards I really have to go, and she would keep saying, well, let me just tell you one more thing. And the one more thing became another five things. And before I knew, an hour had passed of my time. And I thought, you know, this is an hour that I just killed when my time was so limited, raising children and working. And this went on pretty regularly to the point where, because I couldn't assert myself, because I was so afraid of hurting her feelings, I did become aggressive. And finally, at one point, I finally said, I can't talk to you anymore, and I hung up the phone. And I guess she was so upset at me, you know, that she didn't call back again. But when you can't say what you want because you're afraid of hurting people's feelings, and you have this non-assertive behavior, it's like you don't feel you're worthy of asking for anything. And when we go into these marriages already feeling non-assertive and we have to please someone, and if there's a problem, we have to be the fixer-uppers because we're the ones that have to fix up all the problems, and you're dealing in a marriage where there's no fixing, and no matter how hard you try, you just keep getting smacked down because, you know, you can't please a gay man. You know, this really takes a bigger toll on your self-esteem. And what you were saying before, Misty, about your workshops, I mean, this is the reality, whether women want to accept it or not. If you cannot love yourself and you cannot feel good about yourself, you will never have a successful relationship with any man.
I have to agree with that, Bonnie. It's one of the most important building blocks there is. It's the self-love, the self-esteem, all of that. You know, it's so important.
You have to be able to communicate, I feel I want this, or I feel this, or this is important to me. And I am the worst at that. I mean, I've gotten good over the years, but look, you know, I'm going to be 60 in a year and a half. And look how many years it took me of practicing this. And when I teach assertiveness training, I give little exercises like you do, you know, for self-esteem building. But I want to talk about some of these little exercises that everyone can try. And, you know, first of all, one of the ones I say when we're doing assertiveness training is certainly the one that you mentioned, Misty, learning how to say thank you without having to make a million excuses or having to pretend, oh, no, it's not a new dress. I've had this dress for a long time. Like feeling embarrassed that you have something new.
Yes.
Or feeling that, you know, oh, no, I don't really look that good today. If somebody says you look great, no, no, I really don't, you know. Why do you have to try to pretend like you don't when, you know, somebody's telling you you do? Why do you think so little of yourself that you can't just say thank you? But, like, some of these exercises, for instance, you can be honest with me, Misty, now, because I'm telling you the truth. Right?
Okay, absolutely.
This is our moment of honesty.
Honesty is our first policy.
Okay, so I'll start with easy things. For instance, have you ever been in a restaurant and received a meal that wasn't what you wanted and been afraid to send it back?
Yes and no. Yes, in my previous life, but not in my current life.
Okay. Well, me too. I'm not afraid anymore of saying, no, this isn't right. But in the past, I used to just accept it, and if I didn't like it.
For all those that know me, I have this huge aversion to fresh tomatoes. And I absolutely cannot eat anything with a fresh tomato. And my self-esteem was so bad when I was married to my ex-husband. I would just sit and try to pick off. You know, have you ever tried to pick out finely diced fresh tomatoes out of a salad if you don't like tomatoes? I would just find myself doing that because I didn't think I was worth asking for a repeat salad because, you know, they messed up on the order.
Right. And how many times did I receive meat that was cooked the wrong way or other kinds of, you know, food that was cold and I just accepted it? You know, so definitely I had non-assertive behavior. Let me just see who's calling. Let me just see who's calling to join us for a moment, Misty. Hold on one moment. Hello?
Hi, Bonnie.
Yes, this is Bonnie and Misty.
Hi. I don't know if I should say my name on the show. I've actually gotten your letter for years, and I've been part of your chat groups before.
Okay. Well, welcome to our show, whoever you are, or you can tell us who you would like us to call you.
I don't know.
You can use your you can use your middle name if you like. Or you can use anybody's
Beth.
Name that you like. Pat?
Beth. I'll just think Beth.
Okay.
Yeah, Beth. Pops my head. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Welcome.
Welcome to our show. And how? What would you like to comment on tonight?
I just want to comment on how hard it is when you're preparing to try to gain independence and the situation changes, you know, where you're prepared for one thing and then all of a sudden, you know, like I thought my husband was going to be gone for quite some time. He's in the military and now he's not. And I'm not sure if he's gay or not. My main thing is that I feel like he's definitely verbally abusive, and for a long time I was able to become indifferent towards him because I was able to start making plans for myself so I could do what I wanted to do. It wasn't in his hands anymore. It was in my hands. And now everything's kind of changed, so I think I might be able to get back into where I was, but I feel kind of jerked around right now, and the verbal abuse and the abuse is pretty bad. He left today, and the whole week I've been giving him a lot of time for himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's very depressed. He doesn't like life. Very narcissistic. So today he left, and I'm with the kids, and he has left his phones here, so I have no way of contacting him, and I feel like it's a way to try to control me. So I tried my best to just get through the day. I explained to my kids that, you know, I'm a lot more stressed, but I'm going to try my best, but I wasn't as tolerant of them as I usually am. So anyway, my main concern is, a couple of them, I just want to get back to where I was indifferent, where I feel like there's a few things I can do to get independence from him, because I don't know, do I just say I want a divorce and then just wing it?
Well, I think first you need to get some legal advice. Have you spoken to an attorney yet?
Gosh, attorneys have been horrible. Horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Just judgmental, nasty. I've spoken to a couple. I hate to say that. It's just not.
Have you spoken to any women attorneys?
Yes. Horrible. Horrible. Very hard to talk to about. I don't know how to get, if I'm getting too personal with them, if I need to just say, what do I do? I try to explain a little of the situation. I don't know what to do. I don't know how much money to pay up front or how much, you know, I'm afraid of getting ripped off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically, I just wanted to pay off one of my cards. For some reason, that was, and just take care of me, and for some reason, that was making me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to have a year of having independence and kind of just feeling really strong, and all of a sudden this kind of came back on, and all of a sudden, you know, for the last 3 days I've had to hear things like shut your effing pie hole and shut your hole and shut your mouth.
Yeah, well, no woman should have to live with that kind of abuse. And,
right.
I mean, you have to realize that this is going to take its toll not only on you but also the children, because, you know, I'm sure they hear what's going on also.
Definitely. But I don't know how to gain
Do you have family that can help you? You need to leave.
I know. My mom kind of abandoned me when I was going through a hard time with him before.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't trust her. I don't know how much help. Like, I don't know. my family treats me pretty independent. I don't know what kind of help I even need from them or should ask for, or that what's reasonable or what's not reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like right now he's gone. And I wonder if he's going to hurt himself.
Well, don't worry about him hurting himself. Worry about you.
Right. It's just,
and I have you know, some ideas for you. You know, regardless of where you live, especially if you're, I assume, are you stationed in the States? Do you live in the United States right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Get your phone book. Look up any type of women's shelter. And start there. Ask
them. I don't trust
women's
shelters.
Well,
they
you're going to have to find some place.
Especially
to
when
start.
It involves children, they get real CPS. What's the word? They get. I don't trust that people are really out to help me. I don't.
Well,
it's
one of the things,
a very hard thing.
One of the things I'll be happy to do is if you email me today or tonight or tomorrow, I'll send you a really good link for women's legal services, and they're really geared for the woman. You know, they have women attorneys who are out to give you the advice that you need and the support that you need. You know, they work primarily with women's issues and, you know, around these kinds of sensitive things so that you don't have to feel that somebody's not on your side.
Okay. That is how I feel. I mean, I feel like when I feel like I have to hide a lot of my feelings from most of my friends. I have a few I can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like my counselor, I feel like people, I feel like half the time I believe it's just regular male women issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes I want to believe that, and I feel like that's what my counselor believes. You know, my husband's really good at portraying that he's a normal guy. And
well, no normal guy would talk to his wife the way that your husband's talking to you. And how about, are you financially able to be independent?
I don't know. It's hard for me to get a job right now, but I wouldn't say it's impossible if I really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what the first step is. I was feeling great with him being gone, and now I feel like I don't know.
Well, the first point is that you do realize that you felt great when he was gone, so you need to get him gone. You need not to be in this marriage anymore, and do you feel afraid to tell him you don't want to be in the marriage? Do you feel he'll be physically harmful to you?
No, I just feel like I don't know how to. I feel like there's nothing certain. Nothing certain. I have a couple girlfriends in the same situation as me. They, you know, it's like my girlfriend today said, people think it's so easy, you know, on the other side. Just leave.
It's never easy, but you know, I'm going to be the first to tell you, I know it's not easy. However, it's easier than staying. And I know that when my marriage ended many years ago, I was very vulnerable because I had two little babies, you know, 3 months old and 2 years old. I had no source of income or support, and I literally had to turn to the, you know, welfare department to support me for 3 years while I went to school. So, you know, I only had a GED at that time. You know, I didn't have any basic, you know, education other than that. And I struggled terribly, you know, because I was up working all night, all day with the kids. But let me tell you something, as bad as it was still better. It was better living without than having to live in a household where there's that kind of, you know, tension going on where you have to wake up feeling sick every day.
Right.
You know,
I feel like that does help me
better.
Hearing that. Yeah, I do. That does help me hearing that. And I keep saying to myself, all I want is stability. I want to know what to count on.
Exactly.
You know right
you can
now,
count on yourself.
It's not stable.
You know you can count on you, and you know that you can always live on less. You know, when I have women call me and tell me, I can't leave, I am not leaving my house, and I say, okay, well, then sit and suffer in your house. I mean, a house is not a home. It's a building. It's not your peace of mind. It's not your sense of security. Security is not having to walk on eggshells every minute wondering what's going to happen next. I'm wondering what kind of mood he's going to be in the minute
he's divorced. It's also wondering how nasty the divorce will be. How it just, I guess I worry less about those things. I don't know why I need to feel like I have, I guess I feel like I need to have some control over something, you know?
Right, and you can take that control. You know, he's making it that you can't take it, making you feel powerless and helpless, because that's how he keeps control. And that's how these guys who are bullies, they do it. They isolate you. They make you feel helpless. They make you feel so bad about yourself that you're not able to lift yourself up. And then you just get into a state of depression, and you're unable to move, and you're paralyzed. And you were doing really well when he wasn't there. And all it takes is for him to come back and push a few buttons, and you're right back where you started from, right?
Right.
And no man
right.
Knows
all
right
of a sudden, I have feelings again, and I remembered the good things and forgot the bad, and I was vulnerable, and you know it was so much better when I was and just planning my own path, and you know, whoever wants to get on that ship with me, they can get on it because I want my life to be stable, you know, and
exactly.
I don't know. I need to feel like I'm on that path, like that I'm doing things, you know, that I'm on that path. And I don't know if I should just go in and just start signing papers, if I should maybe go to a mediator instead of a lawyer, because I'm not into lawyers. I don't want to screw myself. A lot of that stuff I don't really want to deal with. I don't want to deal with people.
That's why send me a note, and I'll send you that link for the women's legal services. Because you need to find some support groups in your area, like Women in Transition. You know, that's one of the organizations. I live in Philadelphia, but, you know, they're all over the place. They have all kinds of women's groups or women's divorce groups to give you support. And it doesn't have to be because of the gay issue. It just has to be that the marriage has to end. Because it's an unhealthy and a toxic relationship for you. I mean, look how you're walking around now.
I would even suggest to find an attorney that specializes in, abusive situations for women. There are attorneys out there that specialize in that, that can understand and know what some of your needs may be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that's why I think if you contact this organization, and tell them that, you know, you're in a situation that is abusive, and, you know, tell them it's not physically abusive, you're not in any physical danger, you know, but it's very emotionally abusive, and that, you know, you need to find someone who understands what you're going through, and, you know, they will help you find the right resource.
Okay. I want to feel like I can kind of put my feelers out there to see what I'm going to do a little bit before I do it. I feel like when I talk to a lawyer, they want the, you know, $50,000 and they want the commitment and they don't want to talk about it. They don't have time. And I would like to meet some of these women groups you're talking about, Women in Transition. The only group I know about in my area is a singles divorce group for men and women. But I would really like to meet a women's group like that and possibly start going to one of those to get some confidence in what I'm doing and what I'm able to do.
Send me where you live and I'll find some groups for you. Because, you know, you need to find support. You know, if you can't get it from your family, you need to get it from an organization or from a group or from friends, because it is very difficult doing this on your own. And especially when there are children involved and, you know, you're in an emotional low tide in your life. You know, divorce is never easy. I always tell women, especially when you have children, it's so hard for women who don't have children. But when you do have children and you're tied into the financial responsibilities, being a single mother, and believe me, my life was never a picnic, you know, raising two children. But the bottom line was, it was less of a picnic when I had a husband who didn't, you know, wasn't treating me right. Because I couldn't focus on them. I was just too distraught every day. You know, I woke up every day feeling sick. I went to bed every night feeling sick. I was crying in between. You know, I didn't even know who I was anymore. And you sound like that's happening to you now. Are you feeling that way?
Well, I'm starting to wonder if I'm getting tolerant or just overseeing some of the things that he says or the way he treats me. I mean, some of it I definitely know, you know, like, this is not appropriate, and I say it, but I feel like I've been blinded by it. You know, something happened to me where
How many years have you been with him?
Okay. I have to think. I think it's been ten
mm-hmm.
years.
Well, that's a long time to be with someone who is not treating you right. You know,
yeah,
it didn't take that long for me to peel down, so I'm sure you've had a lot of years to peel. You know, to lose
yeah.
who you are with him, always trying to make him happy or make him feel like, you know, things can be better, when in fact they're not getting better.
No.
And does he
and
ever...
It's really hard, the narcissist thing. I really feel like, would it really be that obvious to people if somebody's narcissistic?
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's really frustrating to me, because I really think that, and I keep coming back to that, and I feel that. I feel it's really hard to get an emotional connection. I feel like,
well, if
you know,
don't mind,
he knows.
I would like to read you a little bit about a narcissistic relationship. And
mm-hmm.
this is from a really good article I'll be happy to send you. And it's called Popping the Narcissistic Bubble. And it says, I had a dream last night that was quite interesting. In my dream, a friend was over visiting, and I was talking about how distraught I was over my husband's recent behavior. It was very narcissistic. He had become aloof, detached, condescending, and playing head games that were making my mind spin. As I was explaining my husband's behavior, I kept saying how he was nothing like this in the beginning and how everything had changed. My friend in the dream, who ironically is a psychologist, said, well, maybe in the beginning he felt you were the one. I awoke from my dream and couldn't get that thought out of my head. I knew it had some deep significance, and yet it was profoundly simple. In narcissistic relationships, we often feel that we have found the one person who will change everything for us. He is the one who will right our wrongs, who will make our lives worth living, who is the answer to our prayers, our dreams, and our hope for love. He is the perfect fit, the perfect complement to our lives, and we know just who this is. He's the one. When we feel someone who dashes into our lives romantically is the magic one, we assign him a lot of value. He is the one we would marry and spend the rest of our lives with. He is the one who finally makes us feel like we are worthy of all good things life has to offer. We pin our hopes and our dreams on this person, and they have a great deal of importance in our lives. Those of us who have suffered through narcissistic abuse go through the very painful trauma of having all their hopes and dreams shattered. As we explore narcissism, we come to understand that perhaps he really didn't care after all. Perhaps he really didn't mean anything to him. Perhaps the whole relationship was just an illusion. And although this could all be true, I would like to explore another perspective. What if the wisdom in my dream is true? What if in the beginning he felt you were the one? What if he pinned just as much hope and expectations on you as you did on him? What if you both assigned each other the power to make each other happy? If you've done any soul searching, you know by now that we really can't make someone else happy, nor can someone else make us happy. We are all responsible for our own happiness. When we start a new relationship, we are hopeful and often project all our hopes and dreams upon the object of our affections, and likewise when he does the same. But what happens when we reach the point where the romantic veil no longer protects us from ourselves? When the truth surfaces and exposes the fact that no matter how much hope we have, we can't escape the pain that we've spent our lives trying to avoid. Our wounds run deep, and in the case of the narcissistic personality, there is a deep denial as well. There is a denial that says, I can't possibly be this unhappy or in this much pain, and it must be her fault. She's making me feel this way. The romantic illusion dashes into our lives with such power as to wipe away the pain that lies deep beneath the surface, if only for a little while. It's like a Band-Aid covering the wound so that we don't see it. But it's still there, and if you rip off the Band-Aid without care, it will open the wound again and leave you bleeding. We all want to believe in love. We all want to believe in companionship. We all want to be happy. A narcissistic personality longs for happiness just as you do. What separates those who are narcissistic from those who are not is simply compassion and empathy. We can empathize with our partner's pain. Like any loving, caring person, we want to make it better for our partner. We would take it away if we could, and this is exactly what we do. We minimize their pain by being the scapegoat. Not only are we carrying the burden of our own pain, but we also carry theirs. If one is unconscious, he will not see the need to take responsibility for himself and what he creates. He will easily blame his partner and condemn her for his bleak reality. He may also seek comfort and companionship somewhere else. He may seek out someone else to project his dreams and hopes upon, someone who won't disappoint him as you did. And this person may replace you as the new one. But what is the one anyway but the person in which we project our hopes and dreams upon? However, we all know this is a never-ending cycle. When we are running from the deep wounds of our past, we will always be running. There is no escaping ourselves. The only path to happiness is straight through our pain. We must face ourselves sooner or later. By peeling away the layers of onion which represent the many facets of our lives from birth to where we are now, we begin to find out the truth about who we are. We are not our house, our car, our job, our accomplishments, our bank account, our physical appearance, who we associate with, or who we are married to. We are not the things that society measures us by. The true depth of an individual can only be measured by what is in his heart and the depth in which he loves. If you study narcissism, you'll find that a narcissistic personality is not capable of love. Why is this? A true narcissist lives in a protective bubble, one that keeps him from the truth about himself. He does not love himself because he does not know himself. He judges himself based on appearances because this is what he has learned love was. Perhaps he had a parent that didn't love him for who he was, but rather how he made the parent look. So all the emphasis was on how things appear to be rather than how they really are. All love begins with self-love. We must care about ourselves enough to take care of ourselves. We must be honest with ourselves so we can be honest with others. We must know ourselves so we don't compromise who we are. One of the Ten Commandments is to love your neighbor as yourself. This also means love yourself as you love your neighbor. Your neighbor is not just the person who lives next door to you or down the street. He is a person to the left and the right of you. He is a person all around you. We can only love our neighbor to the capacity in which we love ourselves. If you are filled with self-loathing, it would be difficult indeed to hold others in high regard. Self-loathing is the root of narcissism. The voice of narcissism says, "I hate myself, I am unworthy. So I will fabricate a new reality where people can't see the truth about me." New reality is constructed on appearances. If I appear to be successful, then I can feel successful. If I appear beautiful on the outside, maybe people will think I'm beautiful on the inside. If I am intelligent, well-read, well-spoken, well-traveled, etc., then people will admire me and I will interpret their admiration as love. Does this sound familiar? It should, because this one kind of thinking is all around us. It's predominant in our society. Our society rewards appearances. Youth and beauty are worshipped more than God. Money is seductive. Outward success is admired and praised. We are judged by the jobs we have, our degrees, our homes, the car we drive, how we dress, who we hang out with, and the overall appearance we project to others. So we might ask ourselves, how easy would it be to fit into society if you were a narcissist? I would say it would be pretty easy if you had the social graces to play the game, because this is all society really is. It's a big game. When I counsel people who have gone through the horrific pain of narcissistic abuse, I always guide them to seek the gift that lies beneath the pain they are feeling. In the midst of our pain, we don't want to hear, "This happened to you for a reason." Yet there is a method to the madness of the universe. There really is a reason for everything. And perhaps the reason for this is to help you see through your own fabrications, your own illusions, that you can become more real. Perhaps the next person you meet that provokes a great emotion in you will generate a different response. Instead of pinning your hopes and dreams on someone outside of yourself, perhaps you'll learn to go within and find what you're missing there. Perhaps you could take responsibility for your own happiness in a way that never really could before. Perhaps you can pick up the pieces of your shattered dreams and build a life not on sand, but on rock, and instead of looking to someone outside yourself, be the rock and look inside yourself. We know by now that dreams are built on sand can be washed away by the first rainstorm, but the dreams built on a rock will prevail even in the darkest storm. You are the one you've been waiting for. So, I don't know if that tells you much, but...
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Did any of that feel familiar?
Yeah, I would love that.
And here it says about what is narcissism. And it also says it's normal for victims of narcissistic abuse to find themselves here researching and educating themselves as to what exactly narcissism is and what can be done about it. The question is often, does my mate have narcissistic personality disorder? However, there are those who have either been diagnosed as having this or who are projecting their own narcissism. It says narcissism is a disorder, a mental illness that causes a lot of pain for both the narcissist and those who love him. It is a narcissist's refusal to accept responsibility for his behaviors and actions that cause so much pain for others. It is his projecting his own repressed feelings of self-loathing onto others and lashing out at others as a sort of dumping or discarding of those pent-up emotions that erode the self-worth of his victims. Narcissism begins in childhood as a part of development but becomes a coping mechanism for those who never outgrow it. The narcissistic reality is fabricated on illusion, and anyone who threatens this reality may fall prey to narcissistic rage, which sounds like that's what was happening to you. Because this narcissistic reality is carefully crafted as a coping mechanism protecting the narcissist from his earliest childhood experiences of feeling rejected, unloved, or uncared for, hurt or punished, it can be difficult to penetrate that reality. It's like a shell or bubble of protection that keeps the narcissist safe inside himself. You know, it goes on and on about it. Self-admiration or self-love, a tendency to overestimate one's abilities and importance. You know, there's all kinds of psychological things in this website, so I'll be happy to send it to you or to anyone else who would like to read about it. Just write to me at bonkaye@aol.com, bonkaye@aol.com. But did a lot of that sound familiar to you?
Yeah, especially the part about how they fit into society, and I always wonder if I'm a trophy wife, and,
mm-hmm.
and that must be why when I go into my counselor, you know, that I admire so much as a counselor, but at the same time I feel like, why is he saying this is a marriage, and you know, why is it about us? I went in there for me, you know, why?
You know what it is, a lot of these guys are really very clever, and you know, they're very excellent at performing to the outside world, and so often we have women that contact us best and they say, oh, you know, everybody thinks my husband's the most charming guy. He's the greatest guy. You know, you're so lucky you have him for your husband. Like, they have no clue to what this man is really like. Because to the outside, they're able to project themselves as, like, the most wonderful guy in the world. Is your husband like that?
Yeah. And I just had actually just experienced some time with a friend on vacation that I always thought great things about her. I've been friends with her years.
Uh-huh.
She's going through a divorce. All of a sudden, it helped me, being around her helped me realize it was just like being around my husband, you know, stopping in the middle of the road with the children in the car.
Uh-huh.
Rage over things that were ridiculous, all the behaviors. And I thought, wow, I think I've become sort of blind to this. You know, because I'd look up the narcissistic and I'd think, yeah, this is it. And the counselor we'd be seeing would say, no, maybe he has those tendencies. People in his position have those tendencies, you know, but they would never say that. The focus was always on us.
Uh-huh.
So this just helped me realize that, wow, this is, I can't believe this. I can't even live with her. And this is just a week. And this is what I'm putting up with my husband.
Uh-huh.
And I started recognizing the behavior again, because, you know, and I was even making some excuses for my friend because she has health problems, and I think she's experienced a lot of pain in her childhood because of those problems, and it's amazing, and it's shocking because, well, the thing is, if I describe it to people, it's really hard to describe it because it seems like it's normal behavior. Because we all screw up, we all do things that are stupid, but when you're really living with these people, you know it's not normal.
Exactly.
I mean, and it was very apparent to me in a friendship, because I thought, I have never acted this way to a friend, and I've never had a friend act this way to me. Maybe, you know, maybe we've had difficulties, but not like this, controlling, and I felt like everything was about her, and that's how I feel around my husband. I always say, everything's about him. That's what I'm thinking all the time, like, oh,
right, but
gosh,
you have to understand that this happens, once again, in regular friendships and relationships. You know, you are a vulnerable woman who's kind, who's good-hearted, who looks to be a fixer-upper of situations, correct?
Yeah.
You can fix them. You can make them better. You can try harder and harder and harder, and maybe you can make people happy.
Yep, and even after it happens, even as I'm very sure that this is happening and, oh my gosh, this is horrible, I'll start to forget it and forgive the person. And I'll think, did that really happen? You know, feels horrible. I just can't believe it. I'll just, time will go by and I'll think, well, maybe that is normal.
No,
you know,
it's,
and I'll make excuses.
Predators look for women like you, for women like me and Misty and thousands upon thousands upon thousands and millions of women who are like this. Because once again, going back to from the time we're born, I'm not sure what kind of family you grew up with, but, you know, especially as women, I mean, it's not that uncommon that we feel this need to take care of others. You know, we're socialized that way, that it's a woman's job to, you know, make a man happy, to make their friends happy. And if we have self-esteem issues growing up and we marry into a situation that just keeps compounding the problems and pushing all those buttons to make us feel, well, yeah, it must be me. You know, it must be something wrong with me. Obviously, I'm not doing something right because the man I'm so much in love with is not happy. We project that their unhappiness is due to us instead of it's their own fault. And guess what?
Right.
They keep projecting it to us also. They play
Why
on
am I waiting for a counselor to tell me, oh, yes, he has narcissistic personality?
You know what?
I shouldn't
Does
be
it really matter?
I can say that to myself.
Yeah, but who cares? The main
right.
thing is, I always say to women, it's like when women say to me they're not sure their husbands are gay. And I say to them, are you happy? No. Well, does it matter? It shouldn't. I mean, the main thing in life is that you have to find someone who is your soulmate to live with. You know, marriage is a difficult, you know, thing to start with, but it shouldn't have to be a battle or a struggle. I mean, every couple that's, normal, unquote, couple, you know, everybody has ups and downs, but the communication's there. The ability to talk about how you feel, to have empathy
yeah.
for that other person, like it says in this article, they don't have the empathy to care about if you're hurting or if you're in pain. They're only concerned about their own pain.
I hear a lot, oh, you're feeling sorry for yourself again, huh? So I try not to cry in front of them. I try to be tough because I don't want
to
hear that.
No, you have to say to him, you know what, you have to take a new approach. You have to say, yes, I am feeling sorry for myself because I never thought I would find myself with a man who would mistreat me like you're doing to me. Yes, I am feeling sorry for myself. You know, I'm thinking about all the years we spent together that I allowed you to get away with treating me incorrectly. And yet, I do feel sorry for myself. You know,
I know.
Instead of trying to be brave and not cry and not break down, you know, and play into what you want him to think, let him know how you feel. You know, sometimes that makes them back off. You know, because they just can't control you anymore because you're telling them how you feel. And that's all part of being assertive and letting people know, this is how I feel. This is how what you're saying or doing is affecting me. And I can't allow myself to keep, you know, staying in a toxic relationship that's pulling me apart one strand at a time.
Well, the problem is I am assertive, so he really uses that to make it feel like I'm the problem. So
you're
it's really hard.
Like,
I just
give me an example of how you're
assertive.
I won't
give up. Like, for example, last night, okay, I did everything all day. I took the kids out for 8 hours to a party, told him, why don't you have you time? You know, I felt like he was getting real tense. Spend the whole day on the computer, whatever you want to do. The rest of the weekend, we can have family time. I coached, one of my daughters has sports. I coached in the morning. You know, I was exhausted by the end of the day. I wanted to pass out by 9 o'clock. He started running water for the kids for a bath, and I said, honey, since you're running the water, are you planning on rinsing their hair out and washing their hair and rinsing it and everything?
Mm-hmm.
And he just blew up at me. I forget what I'm trying to give an example of.
And that's an example of being assertive?
Yeah.
No,
well, okay, he blew up at me. Yeah, I was assertive back to him. I mean, I said stuff back. So, okay, so he blows up at me, and he says, you know, he said something really nasty, like shut the F up, and what the heck are you saying that for? And I just thought, that is so inappropriate, such an inappropriate reaction. And I said, and he said, why are you saying that? You're telling me that, you know, I don't normally do that. And I was thinking in my head, yes, sometimes it does happen, but I just thought, I kind of was assertive. Maybe I was passive in this, but then my daughter came up to me and wanted to show me something. And I said, honey, I'm sorry. I am so exhausted, and I feel like I've been abused, and I just want to go to sleep. Maybe I was passive aggressive in that, huh? I didn't like stand out towards them in that example. I do. I say stuff all the time, and then I feel like other times I feel kind of like I can't even say anything anymore, because how many times can you try to stand up for yourself? Finally, I just say, I mean, I've got to the point where I'm indifferent. I mean, he says something, and I think I don't need these stress hormones. And I just don't even let myself feel anything, you know. I might start feeling it for a second, and I walk away, and
yourself.
I listen to music.
Right, you're numbing yourself from the reality that he's giving you. And that's your coping mechanism. You know, it's easy to numb yourself and not have to feel anything than to have to actually deal with the situation. And I'm not faulting you at all. Please don't think that I am, because I've certainly done the same thing throughout my life. You know, rather than have conflict and rather than have, you know, arguing going on, it's just easier for me to give in. And I think you're like that also.
Well, I got to that point, and it started feeling like married, living single, and that's what my counselor was seeing. And I haven't seen this counselor for a long time, so I just keep trying to tell him, well, this is the point I've gotten to. There's been a lot of arguing and screaming and fighting, and
have you ever asked him if he's happy in your marriage?
Oh, yeah, I think I'm a trophy wife.
Mm-hmm.
I really am feeling that way.
Have you ever sat down and said, I want to ask you the truth, are you happy in this marriage?
Yeah, he said, I wrote him a huge letter about how I really don't want to, you know, I really want to amicably, divorce. I have no problem with it. I don't want to hold him down. I don't feel like that's right. I'm sorry if I've ever made him feel that way. You know, let's try to move on with our lives. It was just like this huge two-page letter.
And what happened?
And he's like, oh, that's not what I want. You know, and he wants more kids. And to him, this is fine, and things were actually going better the more I acted like living married single.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, and he seemed happier, because he's almost thinking things are getting better. All of a sudden, there's no conflict there with me.
Mm-hmm.
But inside, I'm thinking, yeah, right, you know, buddy, if you don't straighten up, I'm out of here. I'm the one sailing my ship now. I'm not going to sit here every day and think, oh, what do I do? What do I do? You know, I
Somebody has the right to
like,
tell his wife, his mother of his children, who he, you know, promised to love and cherish, you know, those were your wedding vows, shut the F up or shut your F in hall. That is not, you know, a way to communicate in a marriage.
No.
I mean, it's just not the way that any woman deserves to be treated.
He
took those kids out for 8 hours yesterday so he could have a date and time to himself. Misty, what do you have to say about this?
Well, it's very interesting. And, you know, I've noticed a few things. And like Bonnie said, I'm certainly not trying to condemn you. I can see myself in some of the things you said, going reflecting on my past marriage. You know, one thing is, I think one of the most important things, as Bonnie just said, you know, are you happy in the marriage, and is he happy in the marriage? If not, you know, I would suggest, you know, start the process of an emotional divorce. An emotional divorce is where you detach emotionally before you go through the real divorce. And, you know, I'm not telling you to get divorced, but if like Bonnie just said, if you're listening to things like someone saying, you know, shut your effing hall up, and you know, how respectful is that? Is there mutual love? Is there mutual respect? And if there's not, I think I would be doing some soul searching and decide what, what is a good marriage?
Well, let me ask you this question. You have a daughter?
Yes, yes. I used to just fight tooth and nail some of the things he'd say inappropriately. It seems
now,
like
let me ask you this. If your daughter was married to a man like your husband, would it make you happy?
Huh, that's one of my biggest fears.
Right, because she will repeat your patterns, by the way. You know, this is the legacy we leave, you know, we leave our children. We can either leave them with a positive, you know, legacy of doing what's right, or we can leave them with the bad, negative legacy of, okay, I'm going to do the same thing my mother did because she said it's okay. You know, if you wouldn't want your daughter living in a marriage like this, then you shouldn't want it for yourself. It's that simple. I mean, you have to love yourself enough to do the right thing by your children. You know, we've discussed this issue many times on our show that, you know, staying with the children, you know, staying in a marriage for the sake of the children, you're not helping them, you're hurting them.
I don't even think that's, I think that's what I was doing in the beginning, and I'm feeling definitely like that's not it anymore. I'm feeling like I was getting on that, you know, road, but then it's funny, as soon as I started feeling that way, things started seeming better, and he seemed a lot nicer. So this is all a great experience, because I'm realizing that I feel like when things get a little tough, that's when he becomes, you know, unavailable, and I don't need that. And I feel like when things are going smooth, when I'm not showing any feelings or anything that could be perceived as conflict with him, he starts getting a lot better. And I
sure, because he's having his way and he's having the marriage he wants, not what you want.
Yep, and I think he can appear like he is emotionally connected or has feelings, and I'm sure narcissists do on some level, but I feel like he throws those things out there more to get what he wants when he knows he has to throw something out there, like, I love you, or I, you know.
Yeah, they throw you the crumb.
It's not a regular pattern.
Right, they throw you a crumb here and there, and, you know, like I say, the nature of us women is to try to take all those crumbs and turn it into one big cookie, but, you know, no matter how many crumbs you gather, it still crumbles. It's not going to be a whole cookie, and you're always going to be settling for nothing more than crumbs. And you don't deserve
And I don't
that.
Even I don't even want another marriage. I'm actually would want to heal a lot before I even trusted myself enough to choose somebody. But what I want is for my relationships with my children and the people that love me and want to be, you know, on board with me, which, you know, I already have some of those people, and I know I'd meet more if I made the separation. And I picture what those relationships and friendships would be like with men or women, just friendships of somebody responding to me in a normal way when I say something, being treated like I have value, like, wow, your request is reasonable.
Exactly.
You're a precious human being. Wow, you know, you give the girls baths all the time. I'd love to help you out. Or, man, I don't really feel like that, but okay, you know, what, you know, just, I don't know, I've kind of forgotten what normal responses are, where people just normally bicker and grumble, but they respect each other at the same time.
Well,
and
that's why I'm saying
that
the
longer
you stay in this relationship, the more of yourself you're going to lose, and the more it becomes distorted, and the more compromises you make just to keep the peace or so you don't have to deal with it. But I'm really glad to see that. I feel that you have that inner strength, that you know what you have to do. You have to end this marriage because you're living in somebody's lie, somebody's farce, somebody's own, you know, resentment of you because they're not happy and you're going to be the target of their unhappiness. That no matter what you would do to try to make them happy, it's just not going to work. And
That's
then they
true.
Resent you more than ever because then they blame you for their unhappiness.
And I definitely want that to be separate so my girls can see. I just want to be so separate from him. I really do. I just want to not be meshed with that anymore, to where anybody can look at us and say, it's your marriage. It's, you know, that when he's acting that way and I'm, you know, I can act the way I want separate from him, and I'm not being blamed for his, you know, I just would love that. I would love to be for it to be just clear. Everyone,
and, you know,
especially
you have
my
to make
kids.
That a reality for yourself. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow, but it should happen soon. You know, it's something that, you know, like I say, you have to have a goal set up, you have to have a, you know, make a calendar, make a game plan. I always tell women, make a plan. Even if you have to adjust it along the way, you know, that you may have, you know, some dips and turns. But at least if you have a game plan or a schedule of, you know, when you're going to, you know, 6 month plan or year plan, whatever it is, to try to, you know, get yourself that plan so that you can get it out of there. I mean, this is not a marriage that you need to stay in. And you don't have to care what is he going to do, what is he going to think, what is he going to say. You've spent the last 10 years doing that. And
yeah,
has it helped?
True. No. I've been working on the emotional divorce for a while already.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, so I can do what I want to do. I'll get the information from you that you've
absolutely
suggested.
Email me.
The website and the groups. Okay, and the
absolutely
legal, that'd be great.
Whatever we can do to support you. And the thing is that you have to realize that you're, you know, you have inner strength that you have to refine right now. I mean, it may take a little bit of time, but you have that inner strength to do the right thing because of your children. You're not looking to make excuses of why you're staying in this marriage, correct?
Right.
You know that you have to go. You know that it's destructive. So you know all the right things. You know, you're not hiding your head in the sand or pretending that it's good when it's not, or pretending that, you know, you have to stay there for the sake of the children. You know it's time to go. So now it's just a matter of getting the support you need and getting the right, you know, direction to go in so that you can go. And, you know, start your life over again and not have all this kind of pressure on you.
What are things I can do when we have a few days that are good and I start getting hope? What are things I can do? Should I have a list of, you know, is it harmful to walk around constantly mad at him? Do you know, it just feels like so many ups and downs. It feels like he really senses when I'm gaining my independence and it's
uh-huh
more attractive to him.
Uh-huh. Well, that's like the honeymoon phase. You know, this is what they do. They try to throw you off track. This is when all of a sudden they'll want to make love to you, they'll wine you, they'll dine you, they'll tell you how great you are. Just to make you really be thrown off track and make you think, oh, it's really not that bad. You know,
yeah,
you know, I can live with this. Or whatever he was doing before, he's changing now. Like, do you ever feel that way sometimes?
Oh, yeah. That's why I want to know what kind of armor I should have for that.
Yeah, I mean, you
what
just have
to do for me?
You have to realize that it's an act. And that, you know, he can act however he wants to act. You know what the real story is. You have to start strengthening yourself. Take advantage of those quiet days when he's not there pounding at you to keep building yourself up. I mean, some of our women will tell you they are the best actresses in the world. We had Maggie on last week. I don't know if you heard the show last week, where she was saying, you know, from the time she found out, you know, and had proof that her husband was gay until the time she was ready to leave the marriage, she had to sit there pretending every night, well, I'm having a great time, we're enjoying the same shows together. You know, the whole time she was breaking apart and falling apart. But in the meantime, she had to become like an actress to win an Oscar so that he wouldn't know. And it's the same thing here. You know, whatever act you have to put on while you're building up your strength and getting ready to go so that you don't have more conflict. Because I think every time, even though it's a good reminder when he treats you like this of what he's really like, it also beats you down mentally.
Yeah.
You know, it also makes you
avoid it.
Right. I mean, yeah, I want to have to keep taking two steps back to move one step forward. Because at that rate, you'll never get ahead. So, you know, the thing is to create the least amount of tension with him, let him believe what he wants to believe, and you have to have your plan to start moving on. Would
okay
you say that's good
that's
advice,
awesome
Misty?
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, we don't want to lead you wrong in any way, but you know you have to get out of there. And
mm-hmm
you know it's time now to start making a plan on how to do that. And that
and
he can't talk
you
out
reason,
of it.
Times like these, it makes me more aware of that. And I just, you know, I was really focused on it, you know, where he took off today. And he, you know, he's gone right now. He's gone all night. And I'm more stressed about when he's going to walk back in. Because I feel like I'm getting more normalcy when he's gone. And then I feel like, oh, great, you know. And he's all stressed and he's taking it out on me.
Right.
and I don't have stability. The only stability I have right now is financial. And same with the kids. We don't have stability. In times like this, I picture my own apartment where I'm in control of it. Oh, I would love an apartment.
Right.
With, you know, I'm definitely picturing some of those things. Maybe I should.
Let me tell you something.
You know,
my mother and my father split up when I was younger. I grew up in a beautiful home in one of the big suburbs here in the Philadelphia area. And it was everybody's dream community to ever live in that community. And everybody, you know, we were living in a wealthy community. My father was a wealthy businessman. We had a house, a split-level home. We had cars. We had maids. We had vacations. We had all the amenities that life had to offer, and we were all miserable and unhappy. And when my parents split up, I was older, but my sisters were all younger. We ended up in a one-bed, two-bedroom apartment, and there were five of us. And yet, in spite of the fact that we were all smashed together in a small two-bedroom apartment, we, you know, even three sisters were in one room, and I shared the bedroom with my mother. And even though we were squashed in, when we went to bed at night, we knew there wasn't going to be fighting. And when we woke up in the morning, we knew there wasn't going to be fighting. And living without that tension, even in a two-bedroom apartment, was a lot more fun than living in that big house where there was nothing but fights and arguments and tension. And my father, when he left my mother, he left her with nothing. I mean, he moved to California. He took everything that we owned and literally left us homeless. I mean, he was really, you know, a trip to be held. I mean, he is the top of the psycho list as far as I'm concerned. Man had no responsibility, but just left his wife and five children in a state of, you know, having nothing. And all I could say was that as bad as it was, and my mother struggled terribly because she never worked her whole life. She was just raising children. She had to first go out and get a job with virtually no skills, you know, and on $75 a week back then and getting no child support. And we lived with, you know, pass-me-down and hand-me-downs and, you know, on pasta a lot and very little meat. And yet, we were still happier. That's why I tell women you can always live with less. Living with less is not the problem. Living in this kind of state of tension and being upset and feeling not worthy and feeling, you know, you're fighting a losing battle and having to worry what he's going to be like when he gets in tonight and how's he going to react tomorrow and how's he going to treat you in front of your children and what kind of patterns are they going to see in your life that's going to enter into their lives. Those are the real things to worry about. Not about
and the stress it takes to make my day worth something. You know, today I felt like giving up. You know, when we had that whole thing happen, I felt like giving up too. I felt like, why do I have to be the adult?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like wallowing and crying. But I thought, how do I do this? How do I pull through? How do I get stuff accomplished? You know, because there's a lot that needs to be done and, you know, I still need to be a mom. And
exactly. Being a mom has to be your number one priority. You know, when you take the responsibility of having children, I tell other women, that has to be your number one responsibility. You have to be responsible for them. They can't be responsible for you. That shouldn't have to be their job. And so many times these kids get caught up in the battle and feel so torn and feel so broken themselves. And to do this to children, to me, is totally unfair. You know, I grew up in a battlefield with my own parents, and I didn't want my children growing up in that battlefield. And I was living in it with my ex-husband. It was horrible. We were fighting day and night because he was someplace where he didn't belong. He was unhappy, and he, you know, took it out on me. And, of course, you know, many years later, he's grown up and matured, and he feels very bad, and he says, you know, I was an asshole back then, you know, but I was young, and I was frustrated, and I didn't know what to do, and I was just trying to do the right thing, you know, and he, like I say, took it out on me, and it left its mark, you know, for many, many, many years to come. I mean, it never goes away, the scars that they leave you. But the bottom line is that I could have stayed. It would have been easier, you know, to have a husband in the house with two little babies. You know, at least he was working at that point. You know, we had, you know, a house, we had some money. You know, we had food on the table, but you know what? The thought of having to live like that to me was just too mentally devastating. I thought, if I'm going to die, I'd rather die being poor than have to die being mentally beaten down. You know, I'd rather have to suffer with the poverty aspect than have to, you know, and I'll build myself up There was no way I could have gone to school while I was married to him. You know, I was every day feeling so horrible about life. There's no way I could have focused on anything positive. You know, the best thing he ever did was, you know, leave me. You know, even though he tried to come back a week later, but that 1 week away from him gave me that strength, just like you were feeling strength when he wasn't around, your husband. You know, you gain that strength back very quickly. You know, you go into a survival mode. But if they're there, it's very hard to survive.
It's very unmotivating. He's very depressed. He doesn't like life for whatever reason, whether he's gay or he's got a low self-esteem or whatever, and I feel that. And are you there?
Yeah, and he's blaming you for his unhappiness.
Yeah, so it's very hard to be around somebody like that. It's very unmotivating. I have a lot of stuff to do. I spend time where I engage with my children. He doesn't really engage with the kids. He spends time with them, but it's not like,
he's like
around them, but not with them.
He's not making that emotional connection.
No, he's not. He takes them to the park and he talks on his phone or he reads. He thinks that's spending time. To me, I do that too, but that's not what I count as my time with them. My time with them is looking in their eyes while we're eating dinner and talking or teaching them a Frisbee game or actually doing things where I'm not on the phone, where I'm with them in every way that I possibly can be, and it's easy, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what being a parent is. But if he's not able to love, just like I told you, you know, you have to love yourself first. If he does not able to love himself, he's never going to be able to love you or love those children. And as a narcissist, they're not capable of giving that kind of love. They can't make that emotional attachment. No, they're detached. They're only trying to please themselves to create a role so that they look good to other people without having any kind of real, true emotional attachment. And that's why no matter how hard you try to stay in this marriage, nothing is going to get better.
It's hard. I read a really great book called Emotional Incest, because one of our biggest issues was his mom for a while. But I read it, and it was a great book. And so I do watch that with my kids. I have a hard time because I want to be honest with them and tell them, look, I'm going to have a hard day. They saw that we had stress. They saw that their dad left. So, you know, this is going to be a hard day, you know. Just know, you know, I'm not going to put up with stuff today. I'm going to be a little less patient. I feel bad doing that, but it's not all the time. And I don't know how to, and the problem is that when I'm left with the kid for a while, I got really good at making sure I was the one getting out and just let him be here. Because it's really hard to categorize, and I need me time, period. And I haven't gotten it. I mean, he was just gone for a long time. I just had a bad experience with that friend. Now he comes back, taking out all the stress. I haven't gotten away once. I've given him me time. So maybe I need to just get babysitters.
Right.
Because
you can't count on him, so you have to count on you as far as being able to find the time that you need, asking people for help. You know, a lot of times with our non-assertive behaviors, we were talking about the start of this whole conversation earlier, Misty and I were talking about that. You know, once again, you think you're being assertive with him. You're most likely being passive-aggressive and reacting to him. But being assertive for yourself is saying, you know what, I need something. I need time, and I'm going to find a way to do it. And asking people around you, look, I need help. There's no shame in asking for help. You know, we want to help everybody else, but when it comes time for us for asking for help, we're so afraid of asking. And I want to tell you something. I've gotten better, but, you know, I was always guilty of it. I was always willing to give help to anyone. But to ask for help for myself, I always felt embarrassed or not worthy enough to get it. And that's part of having a non-assertive behavior, which you get like that when you don't have the confidence and love yourself enough to ask for it. So I think these are a lot of the issues you need to work on. You have to ask your friends, look, I need some help. Can you watch the kids for tonight? I just need to get out, go to a movie by myself, go out and shop for an hour and a half.
Very hard because I feel like that to the extreme. I've been the friend that was there helping move hundreds of boxes. I've been that person.
Right.
And here I am. Like, and then all this happened, and tonight my neighbor came up to me and said, "Oh, you forgot to pay me for the cat." And I thought for a minute, and I said, "Actually, I didn't. I worded it in a way where I was actually hoping when I was gone that you would come over and just keep her company and make sure everything wasn't falling apart, because I wasn't home that, I wasn't gone that long, you know." And how many times did I take care of this neighbor's cat? It made me feel, it's really hard for me. I felt like, wow, people don't think I'm worth anything unless I pay them. It's a horrible feeling. And it just, how do I get over that?
Well, you have to stay away from people who are making you feel like that and find out who your friends are. Find people who can communicate with you on that same level and offer you that same friendship. And anybody else, you need to get them out of your life. You can't have your life cluttered with people who don't know how to treat you correctly.
And I felt like, do you think that I did the right thing where I stood up and just said, hey, you know, I worded that in a way. I'd always paid her, and she's a teenager, but I have always, you know, usually she'd come and do the litter box and do a bunch of stuff, and she's babysat, and she's been very assertive at how much she wants to make.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, her family, I've taken care of their cat numerous times for free.
Mm-hmm.
Never asked for a thing. And I feel like, is that appropriate for me to just, expect the same
thing
of...
You see, at this point of your life, you really don't know what's appropriate and what's not. Because now you're questioning everything. Because you're in such a funk over everything that you start questioning and doubting yourself. And that's why, you know, these are little battles that you don't have to worry about. Start with the big battle of getting out of your marriage. Because that's really where you have to focus all of your efforts and all of your attention right now. Finding a game plan so you can put your life back on track so that you don't have to live with this kind of agony every day. And to realize that there's something better out there for you in life, that you deserve better than what you're getting.
And maybe I won't feel this way about all these little things.
Right.
When this happened, I thought, this is just eating at me because it didn't eat at me. It just hurt me because it happened tonight with everything I'm going through. I just thought, oh.
Right. Now,
like
normally it may not have affected you at all. But because, you know, all of this is coming down at you at one time, every little thing now is going to become magnified. And that's why you have to really focus your energies on, you know, moving on in your life and getting out of your situation. That has to be your only priority for the next, you know, whatever it takes. Mapping out a game plan, step by step, on what you're going to do. And once again, get some good legal advice. I'll send you that link. You know, find someone who you can talk to as far as getting support, as far as some kind of women's group, you know, where they can offer you that kind of support, where people say, boy, you know, I know what you're going through, and we support you instead of, well, let's see how we can tear you down for acting like this. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And then I feel like the more I get away from him, the more I can, I'll be able to get more of that support. And
well, you'll be
feel
able to
like I have
you.
Those people in my life who value me for me.
Exactly. And you'll be able to think in a different way. You'll be able to regroup your life and be able to feel happy about living it rather than living under this kind of stress. We always say no one should have to live like this. I mean, and if you don't want it for your children, then don't want it for yourself. You know, you can't think any less of your situation than you would think of their situation. If you don't want your daughters to marry a man like your husband, then you have to not be living with a man like your husband. Otherwise, it's like I call it the monkey see, monkey do, monkey act just like you syndrome. You know, whatever they see you do, that's how they're going to act in their own relationships. If they see that you're passive and that you give in and that you're not going to stand up for yourself, then when they meet men, they're going to be the same way. You know, you're their role model. And if you can't stand up for yourself...
I feel like I'm standing up for myself. But see, the thing is, every time I do, there's this big blow-up, and that happened for years. And then I just got to be where I'm just indifferent. I can't handle it.
Right, and you shouldn't have to handle it.
Back to it.
You have to mentally build yourself up so that all these little blowouts and, you know, everything he says is not going to affect you because you know where you're going. You know what your goal is. You know how you're going to get there. And that's why you need a roadmap to help you get to
that's
next step. You know, you're stuck
that
in the muck
right now. That helps me feel indifferent.
Yeah, right now you're stuck in the muck, as I call it. But as soon as, you know, you start moving along with your game plan, every day you'll feel stronger. And you can't play into him. He's not the important one right now. You are. You have to be able to, you know, move along. Right?
Okay. Yeah, I've been feeling that way. And then he came home and I just started feeling like, oh, great, I don't have a plan anymore, you know.
No,
I mean,
you
it was
back
the smallest
plan.
Thing that I had where I had, you know, I was just going to pay off a card when he was gone. I was going to just emotionally take that time to distance myself. And
I know, but you don't have any more time. You have to start moving because every time you backslide, it's another year that's going to go by. And before you know it, another 10 years will go by. Now, don't worry about paying off the card. Worry about getting out of the marriage. That
and then the
be your
horrible
number one
thing
priority.
Is, he was gone. I forgot all the horrible stuff, and then, you know, I forgot all the horrible stuff, and then we get together and have sex, and now I'm worried I could be pregnant again.
Yeah,
so
well,
I've got that on me, and I'm thinking, honestly, I'm thinking if I were, I'd want to leave him even more. I can't.
Right.
I can't do it all myself. Just thinking. Oh.
Well, once
if there's
again,
nothing I can do, I can't beat myself up. You
right,
know. Then the very next day, the abuse starts back up. This verbal abuse and.
And you can't live with woulda, shoulda, coulda. You have to now move ahead and say what will be. You know, you can sit and think back and say, I should have done this. I couldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. You know, you can't just live your life on what you should have, could have done. I mean, now you have to do something else. And you'll deal with each situation as it comes along. But you got to focus on now getting a divorce. That's the best advice that I can give you. And like I say, write to me. And I'm more than happy to send you those links and resources.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
So do you feel any better after this whole conversation?
Yes. Does it make me feel so stupid that I might have gotten pregnant again?
We'll save that for the next conversation.
Oh,
and all I can say to you is that,
so it does.
Try not to do anything like that again.
Yeah. I for so long, I was so strong about that. And then I started going to this church group and started really feeling like it was normal man-woman problems. And it's so hard because you can't talk to people about what you're going through.
Mm-hmm. Well, like
honestly,
I say,
and
don't
openly.
Worry about,
so they
don't worry about what could be. Worry about what you have to do. That's our best advice for you for tonight.
All right.
So write to me, and I'll send you the information, all right?
I know if I had another one, I'd be doing it all by myself anyway, so.
Exactly.
I don't know why I was disillusioned for a moment about that, but I've done it all by myself before, and I'd do it by myself whether I was with him or not. So
exactly.
It'd probably be easier to be a mom with a little baby without all this craziness. I'd probably actually enjoy it more.
Absolutely.
Not that I'm happy about it, but everything happens for a reason.
Well, like I say, write to me and I'll send you the information, all right?
All right, thank you.
All right, sweetie, take care and you have a good night.
Okay, thank you.
Better days are ahead.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Okay, bye.
Well, Misty, believe it or not, our night is up.
Our night is up.
And we want to thank all of our listeners, and hopefully you'll learn some lessons from that conversation with Beth, right?
Absolutely.
The most important thing is to love yourself enough so that you don't allow anyone to ever take advantage of you. And if you'd be interested in receiving that article on narcissism, or if you want more information about Misty's self-esteem building workshops, feel free to write to me at bonk@aol.com. And you can write to Misty at her email address of Misty Lynn Hall. I will spell that for you without the southern accent. Sorry, Misty. MistyLynnHall@aol.com. Which will work for like 2/3 of the country, but if you have a southern accent, go ahead, Misty, you tell it to them again.
Should I give it to them? Okay, let's do both versions.
Go ahead.
Misty Lynn Hall. I can't even say, with this cold, I can't even say my name. With a cold and a southern accent, this is going to be interesting. Misty Lynn Hall, M I S T I lynnhall@aol.com.
All right, and make sure if you have anything that you would like to discuss or write to us about, you write to me or write to Misty, and we'll be happy to bring it up. Well, Misty, I hope by next week that your cold is all better.
Me too.
And I hope you have a wonderful week. And to everyone listening, have a great week and learn to love yourself because you are number one. Have a good night, Misty.
Good night and love to all. Bye-bye.
Love to all of you. Bye-bye.